All right. Welcome to Psychology Life Lessons. I'm Dr. Dan Lannan, and I'm here with a great guest, Jessica Chen. So, Jessica, if you could say a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. My name is Jessica Chen, and I'm a global communications expert, author of the book Smart, Not Loud, How to Get Noticed at Work for All the Right Reasons. And I'm also a former Emmy Award-winning TV journalist. That was actually my career starting out. We can talk all about that. But that's a little bit about what I do. I now run a communications training company where I'm so proud to say we've taught over 2 million people how to communicate with confidence in the workplace. And that number keeps growing.
2 million is a lot of people. I'm often a little overwhelmed if my class is 200. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been such a journey because when I started my company, Soulcast Media, which was about like 6 years ago now, I did not dream of reaching that many people. And part of it is because, and we can also touch upon this, I'm very active on LinkedIn. That is my chosen platform to communicate and engage with people. And soon after really doubling down on being on LinkedIn, I became a LinkedIn learning instructor. Oh. And so being a LinkedIn learning instructor, I got the opportunity to create all these amazing courses, all surrounding communications for the most part. And because these courses did so well, I mean, a lot of them are ranked most popular, most watched, you know. So yeah, a lot of people have watched those courses and I'm very excited about them.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious. I'm always curious about the journey that people have and, you know, how you got to where you are. A lot of people, you know, see someone with a career like yours and they're like, how does someone do that? And I think it's just sort of humanizing and cool to see how people got where they are.
My journey started out as a journalist. And I will tell you that even from that job, day one, fresh out of college, it was a struggle. And this is part of why I do the work that I do. So I grew up in a family that I would consider pretty conservative, pretty traditional. I'm Asian American, and my parents are, I would consider, very risk averse, very conservative in their approach. They have very much this you know, scarcity mentality, perhaps that immigrant mentality.
Yeah.
And so when they were raising me and my brother, a lot of the principles and the values they taught us were things along the lines of, okay, Jessica, you got to work hard, you got to study hard. You know, the traditional career path is you go to a good school, you study hard, you get a good job, and that's how you, quote unquote, succeed in life. And that was always the emphasis. And I talked to a lot of friends, both, you know, who grew up in an immigrant family or not, maybe more in a conservative traditional family. And these are very similar values that their parents taught them. But it's funny because when I started working, and my chosen path at the time was to be a journalist, my first job was at NBC in Reno, Nevada. I started working in, as you would all imagine, a very loud newsroom. I was surrounded by aggressive, extroverted, dominant personalities, people who are really good at not just doing the work, but they were also really good at talking about the work. They were really good at building visibility for themselves, pitching ideas, putting themselves out there, and they weren't afraid of rejection. And I remember thinking, like, wow, like for me, I felt like my mindset, my behavior was totally the opposite. It was very just about being quiet, a little bit more timid. And I quickly discovered that, yes, working hard is important. I mean, that's why companies hire us and that's expected. But there's a whole other side to us, which is the mentality, which is our ability to express ourselves, which is our ability to ask for what we want. And that's what I felt like I had to learn. And I always joke that starting out as a journalist, there was no better industry to learn communication skills and to really put yourself out there. Because as you all can imagine, as a journalist, you have to go out there. You have to interview people. You're interviewing, for example, politicians, business people, holding them accountable. And it's like, how do you position yourself to ask them these tough questions when you are just, you know, at the time, 21, 22 years old, right? Right. So there was a lot of like introspection, but, you know, through that journey, especially early on, my mindset changed a lot. And I think that really kind of started, it created that foundation for why I do the work that I do. I want to help people feel that confidence, but not only feel the confidence, kind of know how to level up their communications.
Yeah. So it sounds like it kind of emerged from an awareness of the environment you were in and maybe some tension with the traditional values that you grew up with. And how do I navigate this sort of space?
Exactly. Because in many ways, it felt like a culture shock. Yeah. I grew up in what I call a quiet culture. That's actually what I talk about in my book, Smart Not Loud. I grew up in what I call a quiet culture. But in many Western corporate global workplaces, there is that emphasis of what I call being able to survive in a loud culture. A loud culture are all those things I talked about, your ability to share your thoughts, put yourself out there, ask for what you want. And like I said, I think for many of us, it doesn't come very naturally. Of course, to some people who are naturally charismatic, naturally very extroverted, you know, this comes easy. But I think for me and for many of us, it doesn't. And it's something that we have to learn.
It makes sense too. So I study values, and the values that you're talking about with the traditional culture, they do really stand in stark contrast to a lot of those other values you were describing in the newsroom, which might be things like self-direction, autonomy, excitement, and stimulation, which go really against sort of this maintain harmony, maintain the status quo, get security, feel safe sort of values. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, you know, it's not about changing who we are and changing our values, because they're very much a part of who I am today. It's about expanding what they mean to us so we can still show up in a way that feels true, right?
Right.
Because I have found that if you stay just grounded and stuck in many ways in what I call the loud culture traits, you're going to be overlooked. You're going to be overshadowed. And I think, and this drives me, and it really kind of, it drives me crazy, because I hate seeing people who are smart, hardworking, get overlooked for projects, and it being given to somebody who, just because they are more loud, they have that automatic visibility and they get on that project. So in many ways, when I see people who are in that dynamic, I'm like, wait, I know you grew up in a quiet culture, but let's talk about how we could help you enhance and expand your quiet culture values so you can still succeed and get noticed at work for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious about kind of your latest project that you've been working on. If you could maybe introduce that a little bit and talk about it.
Well, the biggest project is really getting this book out.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of authors now that I'm in the kind of book and author world. And, you know, you hear different stories and you hear of authors who are like, I wrote my book in 3 months. I wrote my book in 6 months. Like,
wow.
The timeline is so different. It took me 4 years to write this book. And I will admit, part of the reason why it took so long is because of all the life things that happened. I got married, I had a kid, and it's just like, you know, life.
Congratulations.
Life just gets in the way, right? But for beautiful reasons. Mm-hmm. But it did take me a while to finally get this book published. And so, you know, it just came out not too long ago. And it's been really exciting to see the positive reception around this book, because it is a communications book. But I don't feel like there really is a book like this out there, where it was written not just for, because people are like, oh, is this like a communications book for introverts? It definitely will resonate with introverts for sure. But it's not just people who tend to be on the more introverted, quiet, timid side. It's really for people who were raised with these values and how you can still hold on to them, embody them, but still succeed in the workplace. So it took me quite a long time to get this book out there, but that was the last big project that I did that I'm just still in this celebration mode right now.
It's very cool. And one of the connections I'm making, so I had a graduate professor who was from Taiwan. And one of the things she remarked to me once was how similar she thought some of the Taiwanese values that she grew up with were to some Midwestern values, things like humility and sort of hard work and just doing the work and not bragging about it and things like that. So I think your message resonates with a lot of people and some maybe unexpected people.
Absolutely. And that was actually the interesting part about writing this book, because when I had initially intended to write it, it was with the mindset of I was going to write it for Asian Americans because I'm Asian American. And actually, sure. In fact, my parents came from Taiwan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so I wanted to write about what I knew. But the more I researched, the more I talked to people, I actually realized that a lot of these traits of humility, modesty, just putting your head down, working hard, right? And being a good person, right? Like, I think these are not Asian American traits. And the more I talked to people about it, people were like, actually, I grew up in a family just like this. Mm-hmm. And then as the conversation continued, then they also kind of shared with me how it was hard when they started going into, for example, corporate America, where it was like, whoa, you're in New York City, you're in San Francisco or whatever, right? And you're like, it's fast paced. You gotta be quick, being quick on your feet. You gotta put yourself out there, right? Because now you're competing against all these, you know, maybe like dominant alpha personalities. And it's kind of like, wait, how do I reconcile this, right? So yeah, that I didn't feel like there was a book like this out there. And so I wanted to go out and write one like this.
Well, that's great. So is it okay if we kind of dig into some of the key ideas in the book so listeners know kind of what they sort of things they could learn?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's start. You talked a little bit about it, but this idea of quiet versus loud cultures is really interesting, and some people might not be familiar with what you mean by that.
Yeah. So I'll break it down into basically four different categories. So if you think about it from a high level, there's quiet culture traits and loud culture traits. And then we touched upon it a little bit, but the way I see it is that it comes out in four different ways. And I'll walk through the four different ways, the differences, and then I'll talk about how we can change our mentality in the sense of how we can think about these four categories a little bit differently to better show up in the working world. So the first category is really what I call how you engage with people. So if you grew up in a quiet culture, you probably tend to be on the more quieter side where you listen more than speak. And of course, in the loud culture, you probably speak a lot, and chiming in during meetings does not feel difficult.
Yeah.
The second one is what I call spending time. If you grew up in a quiet culture, you tend to have that mentality of, let me just put my head down and just work hard and do the work that's assigned to me, right? But if you grew up in a loud culture, you're thinking about socializing at work. And that's how you're thinking about your time. Who can I connect with? Who can I network, right? But like I said, for many of us, that's not the most natural thing to do, right?
Right.
The third one is how we handle wins. So we all do good work. We're making a difference. People who grew up in a quiet culture, they tend to do the work and they know they're doing it well, but they kind of just keep it within themselves. And even when somebody says great job or congratulations, right, which I call handling wins, you kind of just, you know, internalize it. But somebody who grew up in a loud culture, they take that and they're just like, look at me, like, look at how amazing this is. And we all know people like that who are just like,
oh yeah,
look at me, right?
Oh, they love themselves, yeah.
Oh, they love themselves, which is great, right? You love yourself, right?
Right, to a degree.
But it's like, how do you do it tactfully, right? So that's the third category. And the fourth category is how do you manage conflict? Now, for a person in a quiet culture, and similar to how I was raised, you avoid conflict. You avoid conflict. You don't want to get into it. You avoid confrontation because you really want to maintain this harmonious environment. But people who grew up in a loud culture, they're not afraid of conflict. They kind of see it as like part of the process, whether it's like engaging in a tricky conversation to get to a solution, right? They kind of tackle it head on. Now, that's what I mean. You know, if you grew up in a quiet culture and now you're working in an environment where there is that expectation of loud culture traits, now you feel stuck, right? It's like kind of what do I do and how do I show up? So here's where I'll outline the reframes that I want people to think about. So going back to how we engage, which is your communication skills, the question is, it's not about being quiet or loud. It's not about speaking or staying silent. Instead, I want you to think about, when I do speak, how can I make sure I tailor it to what my audience cares about? That is a whole different approach to engaging, because now it's not about should I speak or shouldn't I speak. It's about when I speak, mm-hmm. how can I make sure it resonates? You're putting your audience ahead, and that changes your whole mindset and approach. Now, when it comes to spending time, which is essentially how you spend your time at work, it's not just about working hard and doing the work, which I say is status quo. Of course, we have to work hard. Right. But maybe a smart way to think about it is, how can you take the work that you're spending time doing and how can you leverage it for more opportunities? And what I mean by this is, you know, if you think about the role you're in, the company that you're working for, the organization you're with, a lot of times we're hired to do a job. We get assigned projects to do and we do it. But it may not be something that we want to continue doing, or we have other interests. And I say, when you think about how you spend your time at work, you got to get those things done. But because you're doing it well, you're finishing it, you're reliable, how can then you take that and ask for what you want afterwards? I think that's a smart way of how you spend your time. The third one is handling wins, which of course is talking about it. I always say, we got to be our own best cheerleader. You got to be your own best cheerleader. And even though you know you're doing good work, you have to make sure other people do know about it too. But how do you do it without being boastful? Because at the end of the day, right, nobody likes that. And I think about how, like, when you do talk about your work, sometimes it can be as simple as forwarding an email that you got from a client to your manager who isn't on that email, just saying, hey, I'm so happy that this person is, you know, thrilled about our work, right? Sometimes just creating that visibility for yourself in a subtle way of just like forwarding an email is sometimes all you have to do to let other people know that you're doing awesome work. And then finally, the last one is the managing conflict, which I know for many of us, it's uncomfortable. Most of us don't like tricky conversations. But, you know, for me, I remember thinking, gosh, I hate having like tough conversations, and I would just avoid it. But instead of fighting and just even trying to figure things out yourself, which I think for some of us, we can default to, it's taking a step back and going, wait a second, it's not about hiding or troubleshooting alone. It's about, wait a second, what happened here? When did things go wrong? And how can I communicate the process? I have found people appreciate how you've handled a situation way more than even the outcome itself. So even if the outcome is like the worst thing ever, if they see that you've handled the negative situation, if you can communicate how you've handled it, they appreciate your effort so much more. So these reframes, I think, are very key.
Yeah, those are really great ways to sort of think about some of these different pitfalls. I'm curious which of these was the hardest for you as you were working on this. And I recognize, you know, we're continually working on these things. It's not like you reach a point, you're like, I am this, you know, master of all things now.
I would think the hardest one would be the second one, which was spending time. And I think it kind of goes back to the way I was raised, right? Like, hey, Jessica, you just put your head down, you work hard, you know, don't try to draw attention to yourself, right? And you know, people will automatically notice. And that was a lot of what my parents taught me. But I realized that, yeah, just because I am doing good work and just because I'm working hard, I see how that isn't necessarily the way. And so I'll give an example. So when I first started my job as a journalist, I was working at NBC in Reno, Nevada. And I remember I was doing, you know, good work. I was I was young and I was ambitious. So I was like always turning things on time. I wanted to be seen as like that team player. And, you know, it was really important to me to have that like good reputation within the company. And so I remember one day we had a story come in. And this is actually a story in the book. It was actually the U.S. Thunderbirds. And they're, for those of you who aren't familiar with the U.S. Thunderbirds, they're basically like a air flight demonstration squadron. They basically travel from city to city, and they put on these air shows, essentially.
Like the Blue Angels or something like that, yeah.
Exactly, and it's like awesome. It's like fun to watch, right, with families and kids. And they were coming into town to Reno, Nevada, and as part of their PR campaign, they were going to allow one reporter to fly with them.
Whoa.
I know. I'm not afraid of, like, you know, heights or that. And I was like, that is awesome. So my manager says, who's interested? And so I raised my hand and I said, I would love to do the story. And I remember he turned around and he says, okay, no problem. We'll get you a media pass. You know, this is happening in about 2 weeks. And I gave myself this, like, you know, pat on the back, be like, oh, good job, Jessica. Good job asking for what you want, right?
Yeah.
So the day before the air show happens, we're once again kind of sitting in our editorial meeting, and my manager is going through the stories, and he goes, okay, Thunderbirds, that's happening tomorrow. Jessica, you're not going to do it. Somebody else is going to do it.
Oh.
And I remember, you know that feeling of when, like, your heart just kind of, like, drops to the pit of your stomach and you're like, mm-hmm. whoa, like, what the heck just happened here?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, whoa, like, I thought I said I wanted to do it. I remember him saying that it was going to happen. I was going to get a media pass. And it bothered me so much that at the end of the meeting, I walked up to my manager and I was like, hey, I'm just curious, why is my colleague doing the story? And he said this one thing that, like, has stuck with me the whole time. And it was more like he basically admitted how when he was filling out the media pass form, at the time, he just completely forgot that I had mentioned I wanted it. And he said my colleague, and he said this, she was just talking about doing the story and it was just top of mind. And he said those words, top of mind. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think my manager was being malicious. I think truly it was just human nature. You know, sometimes when people are making decisions, they go with, like, what happened recently. Who is top of mind, right? It's sometimes hard for them to recollect all the conversations that they've had with somebody, right? And that moment when he said top of mind, it made me realize, okay, I got to get good at advocating for myself.
Yeah.
I got to get good at making sure I do stay top of mind. And unfortunately, I never got to do that story. It was given to somebody else. But it made me think about, yes, even though I work hard and I'm showing and I'm delivering, right, and I'm executing, that alone doesn't guarantee the fun and good opportunities that we're actually interested in, right? We have to be able to ask for it. We have to be able to follow up. And we can't necessarily be shy about it. But it's not about being aggressive either, right?
Right.
So
yeah,
that's kind of how I started that journey.
Well, it's so interesting because it's true. Like, we need, if there's something we want, people need to know that we want it. And it also makes me think, you know, when I have leadership roles, oh my goodness, how many people have I accidentally overlooked because they weren't advocating for themselves? And maybe I also need to be a little more sensitive to people who are a little quieter in expressing what they want.
And I think it's amazing that you have that self-awareness, right? And I think for a lot of managers, honestly, out there, they don't, right? They're just, like, kind of going through their day because they're busy too. They're making decisions quickly on the fly. But I do think, you know, if we're talking about being a good manager, leadership abilities, it's really thinking about not just the loud people who are always dominating the meetings, who are always sharing their opinions, but even the more quiet people on our team. We all have that more quiet person on our team. And there's a part in the book where I talk about the quiet culture bias. And I think it's important for us to talk about, which is, you know, the quiet culture bias is the tendency to see, because someone is more quiet, does that mean they're not engaged? Does that mean that they don't care? Well, that's not true, right? Mm-hmm. Just because someone is quiet, it doesn't mean they don't have ideas or that, right, they don't have something that they want to share, right? Mm-hmm. It's just maybe they're not comfortable in that environment. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just not in their nature to be the first one to say. And I think as a mindful manager, like, you have to be, yeah, you have to be aware of that, right? So I think for you, I mean, I love how you kind of, you have that awareness. And I would hope, you know, as we think about leadership and leadership skills, leaders can think about this as well.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure we have time for some life lessons. So I was curious if you had any other life lessons that you've sort of picked up, and they could be from the book, they could be just from your experience, and we can kind of talk a little bit about those.
Oh my gosh, life lessons. There's so many. There's one part in the book where it is a little bit about advocating for yourself.
Yeah.
But the part that I want to focus on specifically that I think is the most important, and I say this because I don't think we do this enough, is I don't think we celebrate our wins enough. And I think for many of us who are hardworking, right? We're just trying to get our work done. We're trying to do a good job. And it's easy for us to kind of create this to-do list and just check, 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 right? Mm. But how often do we step back and reflect and think about, wow, I actually am doing good work? And sometimes the work that we do can seem so small. It's just kind of maybe that fire we have to put out or that task that we have to get done, right? But I think celebrating our wins is one of the most important things we can do for ourselves. But not only that, there's this ripple effect where when you start celebrating your wins, not only do people start to know about it, but if you're around awesome people, they start to celebrate you too. Yeah. And I have this one quick tip that I love sharing with people because people are like, I like that tip, but how do I get started? How do I celebrate my wins? And one of the easiest things you can do, and this is from a work context, by the way,
sure,
is when you open your Outlook or whatever emails that they use, I want you to create what I call a yay folder. Hmm. A yay folder is going to be that one place where anytime somebody says, great job, congratulations, awesome work, I want you to take that email and drag it into your yay folder, because that yay folder will effectively become the one place where you can see and remind yourself of the amazing work that you're doing. But not only that, when you think about performance review season, which all of us have from sure. time to time, and there's always questions like, you know, what are you happy that you accomplished? There's always some sort of question like that, right? You know, mm-hmm. talk about what you did this last half year, right? Now, instead of scrambling, being like, what did I do, right? Like, now you can find all the amazing work that you did in this one folder. Mm-hmm. And then so you can talk about that project you were on, the client that was really happy. Mm-hmm. And that is a great way to celebrate your wins. And I feel like it's also great. This is kind of more like on the side. If you ever feel like, oh my gosh, am I really making an impact? Mm-hmm. Open that email, because it's a great way to give yourself that confidence boost.
I really like that. Full disclosure, I have a yay folder, but I call it cool emails. It's just a folder. And I drag cool stuff, whether it's something from a supervisor or a student. And then because I'm, you know, a weirdo, I also sometimes, I also have a folder called funny or rude emails, which I also save those, but for a completely different reason.
I love that. So in many ways, like, you're taking these little life moments, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's linked to the emotions, right? It gave you some sort of reaction. And whether it was funny or you're just like, oh, that's something that was like, you know, I just want to kind of like put in there. You don't want to forget about it.
Yeah.
But the idea is, because all of us are so busy, we're just trying to get through our day. And that's the key here. We're just trying to get through our day. We're trying to get things done. That sometimes we have to give ourselves that moment to pause. And in this context, it's to celebrate and remind ourselves that we are doing good work, because that can also give us the energy to continue, right? Because let's be real, we have good days and we have bad days. And we have days where we feel very not motivated. And some days we're like, oh, we have all the energy, right? But I do think when it comes to reminding ourselves of the impact we're making, sometimes we have to carve out that opportunity for ourselves.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. From a psychological perspective, it really aligns with good things as well. So there's this concept called self-efficacy, which is basically your belief in your ability to do something, sort of like the little engine that could, I think I can. And it's the biggest predictor of your actual performance. So when you're celebrating your wins, you know, as a psychologist, that makes me think, oh, this is great, because you're reflecting on something they call mastery experiences, which is when you've done something well. And so that's reinforcing your self-efficacy, which then your self-confidence and your ability to do something, which then you're going to be more likely to do it. You're going to take more risks in doing it because you believe in yourself. So I think that's a great insight.
And that, to add on to that point, you know, one of the other life lessons that I learned is mindset is so important. And I think, you know, again, I reflect back to the way I was raised, which was really more about being more, you know, to yourself, conservative, like just kind of keep to yourself in many ways. And I feel that, you know, when it comes to kind of like putting yourself out there in the world, you know, the world is scary sometimes, right? There's going to be nice coworkers, there's going to be mean coworkers, right?
Like,
there's all of it, right? And I feel like your mindset is the most important in the sense of staying focused for what you want. And so, you know, a while ago, I've been doing this for quite a while, but, you know, because I realized mindset is so important, one of the things that has helped me is always, you know, visualizing what does success look like to me, and what it looks like to me is going to be different for how it looks like for you. What does success look like for you, and what kind of life do you want to live? And it's not just like this like concept that I'm just like saying, like, what kind of life do you want to live? Like, really, like, what does it look like? Visualize it, because it's only when you can visualize it that you can start putting the steps in place, because now you have this direction. But it's not just visualizing it one time. It's making it a habit so you can keep it top of mind. I recently downloaded, because the visualization and the habit of reminding myself is so important. I think it's so important for all of us. I recently downloaded this app that it was kind of like a vision board in some ways, but I set it so it reminds me every single day to open this app and to look at this vision board. So it reminds me why I do what I do, right? Because just looking at this, the visualization of it, helps me get back into that mindset of why I do what I do, why I do the work that I do, right? To eventually build the life that I want, which I think for many of us, that's kind of, that's what it is. Like, we're working to build the life that we want, right? So I think that's kind of one thing that I have, that is considered a life lesson, that whatever it is that you want, how can you make sure to keep it top of mind?
Yeah. And it also seems like sort of a side benefit of that is it grounds you in your identity and who you are, right? So you're looking at a vision board and you're being reminded of all these things that you value and these things that you want, and maybe even sort of things that shaped why you want those things. And just to bring it back to psychology again, there's some cool research on an idea called self-affirmation theory, which shows that when you intentionally remind yourself of who you are, you're better able to sort of weather threats to that identity. So when you have that narcissistic coworker who undermines what you're doing, you're feeling more secure now because you've been thinking about who you are, and it's less insecure. It's more grounded in something real.
Absolutely, because it's so easy for us to be affected by that negativity when somebody criticizes us, when somebody, like you said, undermines our work, when somebody is just plain mean, right? Like, we're human beings. Of course we're affected by that. And I do think, you know, feeling it is very natural. And so in some ways it's good to feel those feelings, but I think the key is to not dwell, right?
Yeah.
And it's knowing when to be like, okay, I've been feeling sad or disappointed or angry for, you know, however long, but now it's time to move on. And now it's time to get into action. And I think going back to this mindset of reminding yourself why you do what you do, what's the bigger purpose? What is it that drives you? And it could be, yes, through that vision board, or for me, I'm also a big post-it person.
Sure.
If I want to keep something top of mind and I want to remind myself of something, I have post-its all over my desk. Some of it are like inspirational quotes. Some of it is just like, hey, keep this in mind. But it really helps, right? I think it's that repetition. And again, we have to be the one to do it. But I do feel like, again, it kind of then seeds itself subconsciously in our mind afterwards because we've been seeing or reading or visualizing it consistently.
Well, that makes sense, right? So if your goals and your wants are not on top of your mind, how on earth are they going to be on top of your boss's mind? Right? If it doesn't matter enough to you. So that sounds like great advice. So I did want to ask one thing about something I was curious in, and it's just how in business meetings, in situations where there is an opportunity to advocate for yourself or talk about the work you're doing, I know a lot of people struggle with feelings of anxiety and insecurity. And for some people, when they're anxious, they go silent, they freeze, and then they're really quiet and you don't know because they just kind of look like they've frozen. And other people go the exact opposite way and they're anxious talkers. And so they talk a lot and maybe they talk in circles and maybe it's hard to follow them and you wish they would stop talking. But I sort of see these two really different ways of handling anxiety. And I'm curious what you recommend for people who find themselves sort of overcome with anxiety and insecurity when they're in that meeting with coworkers and bosses and things like that.
We see this all the time, right? And you mentioned two different ways of reacting, and they're very natural. And I think the best way and the best piece of advice I can give people is, well, number one, it's you have to have that self-awareness that it's happening, right? You're like, that you yourself can tell like, oh my gosh, I am talking in circles, or I notice that I am completely shutting down, or I'm using a lot of filler words. So that self-awareness is very important, because it's with that self-awareness that you can do what's the second thing. And the second thing is to remind yourself, okay, when I'm put in these anxious, anxiety-inducing situations, maybe my manager asked me something, or maybe somebody said something and it completely caught me off guard, right? It's having that awareness that you're feeling this sort of way, but then you have to almost like, and this is all very quickly, in your mind, kind of pause and go, wait a second, what's the point I'm trying to make here? And that's the thing. What's the point I'm trying to make here? Because oftentimes, you know, a lot of things that you're talking about, the mumbling, the fumbling, the talking really fast, talking in circles, right? When we notice that happening, we have to remind ourselves, like, what's the point I'm trying to make here? Because just that you asking yourself can completely redirect how you now communicate what you're trying to say. And it can help you end your thought with conviction. So for example, this is how I would want people to think about it. So if you're in this meeting and somebody asks you something, and you're like, oh my God, and you're like kind of going on this tangent and you're like, okay, I need to stop. It's knowing it. And then you're saying, wait a second, what's the point I'm trying to make here? And then you make that one last pointed statement, that one sentence of your idea, and then you stop, period. And I feel like this is it's very like tactical, but it's very important and in the sense, very effective when it comes to controlling how you communicate, but also controlling the perception that, okay, yes, like it was kind of shaking the beginning, but you're ending it on strong ground. So again, reminding yourself, what's the point I'm trying to make here?
Yeah. And it's hard to stop too, right? It totally is, especially when the anxiety's going. I'm aware of the time. So I want to switch to our final two last questions. Someone alive or dead who you'd want to share a beverage with?
Oh my gosh. I have so many, but the one that comes to mind, and it might sound a bit cliche, but I would love, love, love to have a sit down coffee one of these days with Oprah Winfrey.
Sure.
She has been such a huge inspiration for me. I mean, she started out as a journalist herself, but it's something about the way she communicates, something about the way she connects, her vulnerability, her lack of fear of showing her emotions, but also her ability to communicate her thoughts with gravitas and executive presence when needed, I find so inspiring. And, you know, she's definitely one of the people that inspired me to become a journalist when I was back in high school, back in college, right? I would always watch the Oprah Winfrey Show. And you know, obviously she's not really doing too much of it these days, but, you know, she's been a huge inspiration for me. And I would love to kind of sit down with her and just talk to her about, like, you know, life and communications and just people. That'd be my person.
And she's still one hell of a public speaker, as we saw last week.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then if you had to do it all over again, but couldn't do something in journalism or your current field, what might you try?
Oh my gosh. It's such a funny question because I feel like that's what I know. And so that's been my life the last, like, oh my gosh, like 15, 20 years or so. But I would say, you know, one industry that has fascinated me is something around, it's going to sound so strange, hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitality, because, you know, when you think about hospitality, it's serving. It's serving other people, trying to give them the best experience possible. And I'm a huge like experience person. Like going out and having, spending money, for example, on experiences rather than things.
Yeah.
And something about like creating experiences for people in the sense of hospitality. And by the way, when I say hospitality, I do mean like travel. I do mean like mm-hmm. food, dining, like all that kind of stuff. And to like play a role in something like that, to create awesome experiences for people. Something about that kind of excites me a little bit.
Well, and I think, you know, because you're an educator, that's an important aspect of that job and probably one of the reasons why it's so successful.
Creating the experiences for people.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about what's it like being them getting this experience.
That's true. That's
great.
True.
So we have a minute or two left and then I know you have to go, but I want to give you some time to talk about your book and some details about that so people know what it is and where to get it.
Yes. Well, Smart Not Loud, How to Get Noticed at Work for All the Right Reasons is a brand new book. And it's something that I feel is a very important book there isn't one like it out there. So for anybody who has ever felt overlooked, overshadowed, who's ever questioned whether they have to change themselves in order to succeed in the workplace, specifically, do you need to be more assertive? Do you need to be more aggressive in order to get noticed? I want you to read this book because this book is going to help you not only get into the right mindset, but to take a proactive approach to building what I call your career brand. And that's a huge part of the book. How do you build your career brand? How do you build credibility? And how do you advocate for yourself? And then finally, all of this is anchored in communication. So there's a large part of the book where I teach people communication skills, like what do you say? How do you say it? What are you doing with your body language? Because that all forms a perception of you. So This book was recently named a Next Big Idea Book Club must read. So
cool.
If you haven't gotten the book or haven't heard about it, just type in Smart Not Loud by Jessica Chud and check it out.
Well, thanks. And I'm sure lots of listeners will check it out. So thanks so much for being on the show, Jessica. It was great talking with you. I learned stuff. Hopefully the listeners learn stuff as well. And hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thank you so much for having me.